Blog Talk Radio.
Two shows in one day. I feel like I might be the next Tom Joyner, Ryan Seacrest, Steve Harvey. I think it, I don't know, they say that everything in life happens for a reason. I think that in 2015, Jonathan Aldridge has finally arrived. We have a show, a national show, live with Jonathan Aldridge. I want to thank my guests for joining. We have an exciting lineup today, a diverse panel. I'm just so excited. I'm always excited, but I think I'm excited for every show, baby. But anyways, we're actually being joined by, this is a pleasure and an honor. He's a business executive. He's the president of the Negro League Museum in Kansas City. But in my opinion, like he's like a rock star as well as just like a hero, because I'm going to tell you guys something. Baseball was my heart. I'm going to go way back and tell you guys a story that I've never told to any media before. My parents used to have season tickets to the Royals when I was in high school because I was like, Mom and Dad, I love baseball. I want to go, so we got season tickets. The Royals have, they used to have like a really cool advertising campaign during, I think, the last couple of games of the season where they just promote their season tickets. So watching that game, my mom and my dad said, okay, you know what, son? We're going to get season tickets. So I went to, we had a share package, so we went to every other game. So I loved it. My parents wanted to be out of the sun. You know, we're black. We didn't want to work on our tan anymore. So my parents were like, hey, you know, we're going to keep our complexion. We don't want to get any darker. So my parents had seats under the roof. But I wanted to be in the sun. I wanted to be close to the action. So I had a ticket where I was basically about within 5 or 10 rows of the field. So it was amazing. I mean, I got to know all the players. My dad was a very prominent doctor in Kansas City. So he worked at all the Kansas City hospitals. So a lot of people knew him. But I knew Frank White personally. Frank White would actually come over to me before a game and give me a baseball sometimes. That was like the most amazing thing for me growing up. And Frank, if you're listening, you know, I will always love you, Frank. You're like a mentor to me. I played baseball growing up, Frank White, because of you and only because of you. And I'm willing, like we did last year, I'm willing to do anything that I can to help get Frank White to the Hall of Fame, because there's another guy, and I'm sure Bob knows the name. We'll talk about that later. There's another guy who actually got into the Hall of Fame who has similar numbers to Frank White. Frank White didn't get in. Really? Are you kidding me? Frank White has, I think, maybe 8 gold gloves, maybe more, maybe a couple less. But I think it's around 8. And he's not in the Hall of Fame. It's a travesty. You know, I want to be real. I'm a real person. I don't sugarcoat it. I'm not like other media. I don't have an agenda. My agenda is to tell the truth and live my life, and then one day I'm not going to wake up, and I think that if I do the right thing between now and the day I don't wake up, you know what? Life is well spent. So I'm going to put it out there, America. Chris Rock helped us talk about the important issues of baseball that are like a Pandora's box. If I talk about it, if anybody, Frank White talks about it, if any other player talks about it, then we're like looked at as racist or trying to cause problems. And people don't realize, but if you have one day up to 10 years, I'm going to say that again. If you have one day up to 10 years in Major League Baseball, you get a pension for the rest of your life. Baseball is one of the most powerful, if not the best union in America. The owners to this day are still antitrust exempt, so baseball is a very powerful weapon. With that being said, think about it. People say that athletes make too much money. A-Rod shouldn't make $25 million. He should put that money into children. Really? Do you guys know how much owners make? Think about it. People have tunnel vision. They look at one thing because the media has a lot of people brainwashed. They give you guys tunnel vision. So I'm here to get you guys out of that tunnel and show you guys the big picture. Just think about this. I've never, ever in my life heard anybody ever bring up this argument. Here's the argument. If A-Rod can get paid $25 million a year, so think about this. Somebody owns a company that can pay an employee $25 million a year. So I went to college. I have a degree. I also went to graduate school. I made very good grades, 4.0 in graduate school and a 3.79 in college. So I'm not the most intelligent person probably, but I'm not the most ignorant person probably either. I'm somewhere, you know, I don't know. Anyways, with that being said, if we're going to talk accounting now, if that company can pay A-Rod $25 million a year, then how much is that company making? It's a rhetorical question. Think about it. When we come back, we'll be joined by Bob Kendrick of the Negro League Hall of Fame in Kansas City, Major League Baseball player DeJuan Day, and Eric Big E Hussman. Show here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to just throw it out there because I learned that if you ask not, you have not. So anybody listening, my goal, so Tyler Perry signed a $200 million deal with CBS, I think in 2007, for him to put a dress on every day, I believe, and for him to produce 100 episodes of a show. I want a $400 million deal because I'm spreading the truth across this country. I'm bringing up important issues like today, the Kansas City Negro League Museum. About 30 minutes ago, we had Andre Brathwaite, who had an issue with the Missouri Comets. And so I'm not going to talk about that because you guys can listen to that entire podcast a little later in your day. But we're talking baseball right now. So back to my story. So I want a Ryan Seacrest deal. I want an Oprah Winfrey type deal. I want a Tyler Perry deal. The reason why they get paid that much money isn't because they're pocketing that much money. It's because when you get that type of deal, you're able to hire your employees, you're able to hire producers, you're able to hire publicists, you're able to actually expand your business. So if you do the math and the research, that helps Oprah Winfrey create Harpo Productions. That helps Ryan Seacrest create Seacrest Productions. Ryan Seacrest produces Kim Kardashian's reality show and other shows. So when people get those deals from the network, they can produce other things. So my goal is a 400 unprecedented. A-Rod makes $25 million a year. It was the highest contract at one time. I want to be the highest paid on-air host ever in America. I want a $400 million deal so I can bring about these type of topics daily, like Tom Joyner does. So anyways, back to my other story, and we'll have Bob Kendrick on. The reason why I like baseball and love baseball is because number 20, Frank White. He was like a dancer, like a magician. I mean, if you ever had a chance to watch Frank White play, it was just magical. People that could watch Michael Jordan play, that's why they buy the shoes, because it was just magic watching Jordan play. Frank White was the same way as a second baseman. 8 gold gloves. That's what the Negro League Museum is all about. It's about honoring players that Cooperstown doesn't acknowledge, and also the history. You know, I was told off the record, so I'm not going to say, who told me this, but it's true. Negro League baseball owners were, I'm going to repeat this because nobody has ever mentioned this before. If somebody told me this in confidence, I'm not going to say their name, but I'm going to tell you guys so you guys know the truth. Negro League baseball owners were the richest black people in the history of America. So some people say Jackie Robinson is a hero. Some people say he's a traitor. You guys can answer that question for yourselves. But what happened is baseball is a very powerful weapon, like I explained earlier. I'm going to go back. When these owners that own the Negro League teams were at the height of their business, they owned grocery stores, meaning black people could go into a black-owned grocery store and the communities could support themselves. Think about Harlem and some places that were actually places where black people, you know, a lot of entertainers and wealthy black people lived back in those times. Because you got to think, we went to separate bathrooms. We were called, I'm not going to say the N-word, we were called nigger to our face. You know, I think it was even before that, we just could, I think, what, 50 years we were able to vote? So we're not talking about things that were dinosaur, you guys. 50 years, and I think Mr. Kendrick can probably talk about some things that actually happened in his life so that you guys know what it was like and how, with things that are happening in Baltimore, things haven't really changed. Martin Luther King had a dream. I have a goal. So it's time to get to those things right now. But Frank White, and I'm going to let Bob come on. Frank White is the reason why I play baseball. So in Little League, you can only pick one number, and I wanted number 20 every time that we had a Little League game. And it never went up. It went up to, I think, like 16 because you don't have 20 players in the Little League. My mom was like, you know what, baby? Why don't you pick number 2 because 2 is part of 20. And since you can't have 20, thank you, Mom, for that. Thank you, Mom. Rest in peace. I love you, Mom. Thank you for that. And I wore number 2, you guys. So all my life, I either wore 2, 22, 20 when I could in college because of Frank White. So that is why I wanted to have Bob Kendrick on this show. Eric Hudson may have actually worked with Frank White when he was a ball boy and a clubby and a bat boy for the world. So without any further ado, Bob Kendrick, welcome to the Live with Jonathan Ultra. Tell us all about your amazing museum in Kansas City.
Jonathan, thanks for having me on the show, man. It's a pleasure. We've got a great museum. It documents a story, a piece of baseball in American history that very few folks know anything about. The thing that I love about this story, though, I think for a lot of people who come to see us, and we're getting thousands of people from around the world who come here to Kansas City to experience the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, I think the moral majority of them think they're going to be introduced to a very sad, somber kind of story because we know the story relates to the ugliness of American segregation. But really the story here is not about the adversity, but what they did to overcome the adversity. So this is a very triumphant story. It is the power of the human spirit to persevere and prevail. And what you witness here is how the love of our sport, the love of baseball, drove these men to endure tremendous social adversity. But they went on to become great, and they built this very thriving baseball enterprise known as the Negro Leagues. You alluded to it a little bit. Negro Leagues baseball was the third largest black-owned business in this country during that era of American segregation. And it
hold on one second, because I forgot to bring up a point. So back, I want to, and maybe you can help elaborate on this. So everybody listening right now, this is actually a Black History moment that you will never hear in school, and no other media outlet is going to report this. From what I learned from my private source, back when black owners owned Negro League baseball teams, blacks were actually coming out of the slavery era into a place of self-empowerment. The owners of these black Negro League teams owned their own grocery stores. So they were self-sufficient. They were the richest black people in America, first time unprecedented. So this is the thing. Major League Baseball likes to promote Jackie Robinson. In my opinion, and it's only my opinion, so I'm not saying that anybody else is saying this, but Jonathan Aldridge, Major League Baseball loves Jackie Robinson because, in my opinion, like, people look at A-Rod making $25 million instead of looking at how much the team makes to pay A-Rod that kind of money. So what I think is, in my opinion also, but from what I have researched and been told secretly, these Major League Baseball didn't bring Jackie Robinson into Major League Baseball as a compliment. It was a business deal because the single moment, and I want to say this very slowly so everybody can hear me. I talk fast, and I'm a New Yorker at heart. I've lived in New York, so I'm just going to always talk fast. But for this, it's important. I'm going to slow down for everybody. So one, it's very, very important. The minute that Jackie Robinson crossed over into the Negro Leagues, that destroyed the black economy to this day because those owners went bankrupt. That league folded. All the other players had nowhere to go, so they all ended up playing in the major leagues. And then all of a sudden, those same grocery stores that the black baseball Negro League owners owned closed. So let's do the numbers. Chris Rock just helped everybody understand that in the 80s, there were 20% black players. So we're looking at look at this. It's a big slope. You have no players in 1947, one player in 1947. In the 1980s, you have 20% black, and 2015, you have 8% black. You have the floor again, Bob. I just want to get that out there.
Well, it's a very complex set of circumstances. And again, Jonathan, I'm not sure anyone will know exactly what Branch Rickey's full motivations were when he signed Jackie, because keep in mind, Branch Rickey's place in history was already well cemented. He had built a dynamite Cardinals organization. They'd had a lot of success. He moves to Brooklyn and takes over the helm of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Certainly it was economically driven because it didn't take a math science to see that the Kansas City Monarchs, Memphis Red Sox, New York Black Yankees, New York Cubans would play a 14 doubleheader at Yankee Stadium, and they would put over 40,000 fans. The moral majority of those fans were black, that there was certainly a clientele that needed to be tapped into. But, it also the person that made the move to be the first was going to be severely ostracized by his peers. There were other major league owners who had thought about the notion of integrating the game well before Ricky. Clark Griffith had tinkered with the notion of bringing Josh Gibson and Buck Leonard in the early 40s. But he knew it just wasn't worth the criticism that he was going to get to try it. You know, you were just going to be basically ostracized by your own group of peers and who wanted to take that risk at that time. The timing was right for Ricky to do what he did, irregardless of what the motivations may have been. But you're right. There is always a cost for progress. And black businesses paid a dear cost for what was deemed progress from a social standpoint, because the integration of baseball essentially was the springboard for integration in our society. And with that, we started to lose some of the things that we had within the African-American community, because those smaller black businesses could no longer compete with those larger white establishments. And in some respects, the African-American community turned its back on its own businesses. So, you know, there's a lot of fault to be shared very much equally. And so those black businesses basically died. And again, as I share with our visitors here every single day, there's always a cost for progress. Today is more technological in nature, but each technological advance, somebody loses their job. And it was no different. Negro Leagues Baseball was bringing a built-in clientele that led black businesses to their economic heights. And so we touch upon that in the greater context of the story. Yeah, it's about those unsung baseball heroes. You know, if you come here expecting to meet some pretty good baseball players, you're going to leave not being disappointed. You're going to meet some of the greatest baseball players to ever put on a baseball uniform. But you're also going to witness how this country became the country that she is from a social standpoint and that continued development. Now, we still have a lot of work to do in this country, but baseball has had a pivotal role in advancing our society from a social standing.
When we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Major League Baseball pitcher DeJuan Day on the Live with Jonathan Alder show here on Blog Talk Radio. My next guest is ex-Major League Baseball player, played for the Chicago White Sox, played in college, and he's black. So he'll have a very great view on this conversation. So, DeJuan Day, without any further ado, what do you think so far?
I'm sitting here happy that I'm learning. You know, I can't say that I'm a baseball historian. I pretty much only keep up with the current issues. You know, I don't know if that's something that I should brag about, but it's something I can openly admit. You know, I think a good point was made. Like, baseball has provided a lot of African-Americans with a lot of opportunities, myself being included. You know, despite all the hardships, everything that I went through, it's tough. You know, we talked before about the bitterness that it gave me, you know, in respect to the game. But at the same time, like, we love baseball. I still, in my heart, love baseball. And baseball has opened a lot of doors for me that I know may not have happened, you know, coming from, you know, out of Jackson, Mississippi. You know, small town, it's just, you know, it opened my eyes to the world, and it taught me a lot about myself. It taught me a lot about the world itself. It's forced me to work hard and never give up. It pushed me in directions that I honestly don't know if I would have ever done. And so it's, like I said, it's tough. Like, all of that's tough. It's tough for anybody in my shoes, anyone that has gone through it, anyone that wants to go through it. And that's the only advice I give to everybody. It's not for the weak-minded. Like, it's not at all. There were many days that I almost quit. Actually, there was one specific day that I really tried to quit. And my then agent and mentor, close friend of mine, Dave Stewart, you know, the only thing he told me was, don't ever leave the game. Let the game leave you, meaning don't quit. You know, make sure don't leave the game until you're forced out of the game. He gave me that advice one morning. I was in tears, called my mom, wanted to finish school. I took that advice, finished the day, and a year later I was in the big leagues. You know, you never know how close you are to achieving a goal. You know, it could be right there on the other side of the door, and you have to keep kicking. You have to keep going until you knock the door down.
I'm gonna explain the paddle theory. I was in New York a few years ago, just like you, Duane. I lost my mother and father within a 12-month period. Very hard time for me, and I had just started a brand new company, which is what I'm doing now. And like you, I was like, I just want to give up. I was in the, I'm gonna plug it. I was at the W. If you guys know the W, you can go to any W in any city in America. You're gonna have a great time. I don't drink alcohol, so I was just at the W, just chilling. And this guy, Caucasian guy, seeing the demographics, he walked over to me and said, "You have it all figured out." I go, "Huh?" He goes, "Well, you're the smartest person in here." This is a total stranger. I go, "Well, thank you, sir, but what do you mean?" He goes, "I was in your shoes once. I never met this guy before." He goes, "Paddle theory." I go, "Huh?" He goes, "You're here trying to figure things out." He goes, you're the smartest person in here. I've watched you." He goes, "You've been looking around, just enjoying your night, you know, just by sitting here drinking water, but you're actually thinking about your life." I go, "Well," I just started smiling because he called me out. I go, "Well, sir, you're exactly right." He goes, "Paddle theory." And I go, "What's the paddle theory?" He goes, "Paddle theory means you have a dream and a goal. And it's like being in a boat. So in a boat, you're on the shore and you want to go to the other side. Well, you get to the middle to take a break. In the middle, you actually look to where you came from. No, you're in the middle and you want to quit. You paddle from the shore to the middle of the water and you're like, "You know what? I'm done. I'm going to go back. I'm going to quit." But right before you say, "I'm going to go back to shore where I came from," you look to the other side and you realize that, "You know what? Well, darn it, I'm in the middle. You know what? If I go back, it's the same distance for me to go forward, so you might as well go forward." That's the paddle theory. Go ahead, Duane.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I totally agree with that. You know, my situation, in my eyes, I got to the point where I felt like no matter how well I did, there was no room. Like, I couldn't grow. I couldn't get moved up. If you understand the whole process of moving up through the minor leagues, there are probably about 5 different levels that you have to go through. You know, my first year, I got an award for the best relief pitcher in the entire league, and I ended up repeating that league again. And I just went through it. I didn't understand why. And, you know, for the first time I ever, like, I doubted myself. You know, I just started wondering if this was for me. You know, I've never been a person that placed blame on everybody else. That's how I was raised. My parents, they raised me to be accountable for everything that I do, the results or anything positive or negative. And so I couldn't figure out why. And the other reason why, you know, I gave Stu a lot of credit for it, but I'm not a quitter. You know, I would have never made it if I was a quitter. Anybody that knows me know that I'm one of the most competitive people that you can possibly meet. And I just didn't want to give up. I just didn't want to quit, you know, despite all that and, like, all the hard work, all the nights where I used to – that I would leave the game and come home and run. You know, like, I didn't party during the season. You know, I stayed disciplined. I did everything that I was supposed to do. So in my heart, I felt like there had to be a better outcome. You know, I thank God, and I really thank God that I didn't quit, because I wouldn't have achieved that dream. And like I said before, like, it did come with a lot of heartache. I did leave with a sour taste in my mouth, you know, aside from injuries, just, you know, a lot of things that I went through. It wasn't that I was alienated, but there were many lonely nights. Like, I was, even when I was in the big leagues, you know, I think that's supposed to be the most glorious time that you have. That's what you work your whole life for. And that was probably the toughest time I had. And not on the field. It was just
Say that again, Duane. I want to say that again. I'm going to say that again. We're going to take a break. Duane Day said that when he became a Major League Baseball player, now he went to Jackson State University, he went to Southern University, and then he got drafted, and he went through the ups and downs of the mental anguish of you know, rejection and wanting to quit and wanting to give up, not giving up. But he made it to the major leagues. Duane just said that when he got to the major leagues, he felt the loneliest. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Eric Biggie Huntsman, who is a clubby for the Kansas City Royals. He's a current swim coach in Missouri. We're going to get his take on baseball. We're going to hear about his favorite moment as a clubby. And then we're going to have all the guys talk baseball when we come back on the Live with Jonathan Aldrich show here on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome back to the Live with Jonathan Aldrich show. My next guest is Eric Big E Huntsman. Now, Eric and I used to work together in the locker room. We were in the visiting locker room at the K. The K is Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. Duane, did you ever play against the Royals?
No, I didn't. I was actually on a rehab assignment when the team went to Kansas City.
Okay, so I'm gonna tell the story. So, like I said earlier in the broadcast, my favorite player growing up, hands down, was Frank White. That's the reason I wore 2, 20 and 22, because he wore number 20. He played second base. I played second base as a professional baseball player. Frank White, once again, thank you for the inspiration. And I'm sure, DeWalt, with your story, I'm sure you're inspiring a lot of people. When I saw you, you know, we just got back in touch with social media recently, but when I saw that you made the big leagues, that inspired me to keep going with even my TV show. So, DeWan, believe it or not, you inspired me. So, Eric, we want to hear all about – what is a clubby, Eric?
Well, you know, I wanted to backtrack for just a second.
Well, hold on. We want to hear what a clubby is. What is the definition of a clubby? People are probably like, a clubby? What's a clubby? So what is a clubby? go ahead and go wherever you want to go.
Yeah, you know, before we go into that, I want to let you know that when I get to swim practice tonight, I'm going to share the paddle theory with some of my athletes. I think that's an important thing that they could use to, better themselves in the water and think about what they're actually doing when they're in the middle of practice or even in the middle of a race.
You work for a school, so you guys need to hire me as a motivational speaker, and I'll come down and I'll speak to them.
I would love to do it. I think I need to have you at my end of the season banquet in August. We need to talk about that.
Let's do it. I'll have you talk to my manager. We'll sign a deal. I'll be your guy. I'd love to. I'd be honored. But go ahead.
Indeed. Well, a clubby essentially. I grew up with the Royals, a fan like you. Had the pleasure of being a bat boy with just after Frank had retired, but got to spend a lot of time with him. My first year bat boying, I bat boyed in the visiting clubhouse, and Frank was actually a coach with the Boston Red Sox at the time, and I had a really good chance to spend a lot of time with Frank and grew up with him. I see him a couple of times a year, and I made him a couple of batches of wine back when I was still with the ball club. And when I talk about making wine, I think that kind of sums up what a clubby really is. A clubby is somebody who works in the clubhouse, and we basically do just about anything the ball players need to help them get through the course of their day. I mean, everything from making sure their laundry is done to making sure they're fed, running those errands for them, taking care of their cars, just anything and everything to help them be able to focus on what they need to focus on with their task at hand.
So all the guys now, we have Bob Kendrick on the broadcast, Negro League Baseball Museum president in Kansas City. We have DeWan Day, ex Major League Baseball player, and we have Eric Big E Huntsman, who is a swim coach in Kansas City and also an ex Kansas City Royals clubby. So guys, whoever wants to lead the conversation, I'm going to take a quick orange juice break to you guys. Talk baseball, talk the museum. Whoever wants to go ahead and talk. I'm a moderator. I'm a moderator. So Bob, tell us more about the museum and about your Hall of Game event.
Well, we just celebrated our second annual Hall of Game, and the Hall of Game each year honors former major played the game the way they played it in the Negro League. So you played it with passion and determination, You played it with a high level of skill, but you also played it with a little flair. You played it with a little swag. You know, you had to have that if you were playing in the Negro Leagues, because the game was more than just a game. It was entertainment at its highest form. So you're going to see great baseball, but by the time you left those games, you're going to be thoroughly entertained. DeJuan, the late, great Buck O'Neill, would say that a guy would, in the Negro Leagues, the Major Leagues would accuse him of showboating if a guy went in the hole, flipped it behind his back, and started to double play. Well, today it's a Sports Center top 10 highlight. Well, the late, great Buck O'Neill would say it's only showboating when you can't do it. And so, you know, those Negro Leaguers kind of had that reputation of being showboaters. They were tremendously talented athletes who brought a level of athleticism to the game that the game really had not seen prior to that. And so this past weekend we had Ozzie Smith, the great Ricky Henderson, Ferguson Jenkins, and the legendary Louis Tion in town to be inducted into our Hall of Game based on how they played the game. And interestingly enough, Louis Tion's father played in the Negro Leagues, played for the great New York Cubans. It was a great pitcher himself in the Negro Leagues, and so it was really special to welcome Louis Tion to town. But, you know, when you start talking about guys like Ozzie Smith and Ricky Henderson, Fergie Jenkins, you're talking about some of the greatest baseball players to ever play this game. Ricky Henderson, without question, the greatest leadoff hitter this sport has ever seen, and obviously the all-time base stealer in Major League Baseball. So we had a great time this past weekend. You know, got a chance to tour the museum, and then, of course, had the big celebration, which was a huge fundraising event for the museum as well.
That's amazing. You mentioned some important names. I'm going to go over those names you mentioned. So you mentioned Ferguson Jenkins. It's just cool how, you know, they say, I guess, 6 degrees of separation and things like that, but I played professional baseball in Canada in 2003 in the Canadian Professional Baseball League, and Ferguson Jenkins was our commissioner. So I actually had the pleasure of actually meeting Mr. Jenkins. He threw out the first pitch. It was actually, I'll never forget, it was a Sunday televised game on the Score Network in Canada. The Score Network is the ESPN equivalent in Canada. So it was exciting. You also mentioned Ricky Henderson. Eric, I got to tell you this story, Eric. You can talk to Bob or me about what you think about the museum and maybe your experience with maybe some of these guys. But my first game as a ball boy, okay, I mentioned that I have a great admiration and respect for Frank White and whatnot. So Ricky Henderson, I mean, I'm a fast guy. That's how I made my bread and butter in baseball, with stealing bases. Well, my first game, my second year as a ball boy, I think the Oakland A's, I think, were in town. And I'll never forget, Ricky was the left fielder. So I was fortunate that I was in the locker room like Eric, but during the games, I actually had almost like a spot on the field. You could think of me as the 10th player. I was always behind the third baseman, you know, to the left of the left fielder, sitting on a stool. And I would get the foul balls when they came over, but I actually got a chance to play catch with Ricky Henderson in between innings. So we had some really cool moments. I'm not going to talk about those moments because I'm going to write a book one day. But, so Bob, those guys have to be recognized. So the museum is amazing. I mean, without this museum, I don't know how these guys would get the recognition, Bob.
Well, you know, I think, you know, obviously the guys that we had, and certainly as it relates to the Negro Leagues, they wouldn't have gotten the recognition that they are now getting and justly deserve, because these guys didn't just learn to play after 1947. There were great players well before Jackie Robinson ever stepped foot into the major leagues. You can make an argument, and many have, that, you know, Robinson is handpicked from the Kansas City Monarchs. He plays here in Kansas City in 1945. A lot of people never draw that parallel of Robinson having played in the Negro Leagues. I think the assumption is that Robinson just walked out of nowhere and started playing. Jackie was a great athlete, a tremendous athlete, four-sport star at UCLA. Baseball was his weakest sport. So there were other Negro League veterans who were far superior baseball players to Jackie at that time, for the simple reason that they had been playing the game longer. But Jackie had what I like to refer to as the intangibles that better prepared him to deal with the racial hatred. They had actually approached Monty Irvin, the great Monty Irvin, Hall of Famer Monty Irvin, about being that guy to break the color barrier. Monty Irvin had the same, I think, characteristics that Jackie Robinson had. He was college educated. He, too, had served in the military. And Monty Irvin would have been successful. And Monty Irvin at that time was a better baseball player than Jackie Robinson. Monty Irvin was a superstar in the Negro Leagues, but he had just gotten back from World War II, and he felt he needed some time to get his baseball legs back underneath him, and he was having some contract squabbles with Effie Manley, who would be the owner in the Negro Leagues that would sell Larry Doby to the Cleveland Indians just a few weeks after Jackie breaks the color barrier in the National League. And so there were a lot of great stars that played in this league known as the Negro Leagues. And, you know, I know DeJuan is from Mississippi, down in Starksville, Mississippi. One of the greatest baseball players of all time, man, the legendary James Thomas Cool Papa Bell, still believed to be the fastest man to ever play this game. Clocked him in 12 seconds, circling the bases from home to home. You know, just amazing speed, great defender, would have been a gold glove outfielder in the major leagues, would have led the league in stolen bases every year, you know, had he got the opportunity to play in the major leagues. But he's out of Starksville, Mississippi. But the list just goes on and on of great, great players who played in this league known as the Negro Leagues. And, you know, it's great that we now have a place here in Kansas City where their contributions not only to our sport, but their contributions to our society are being remembered. And it's at a time when there's only a handful of these men still alive. So what stood at risk was in the not-so-distant future, these guys were all going to be gone. They were going to die. And with them, their story was going to die, and we cannot allow that to happen.
So I have a proposal. We're filming a show in Kansas City called the Inside Kansas City Show, and we film with the Royals, the Sporting KC, the Missouri Comets, the Pledge Life, and a bunch of other places. And I propose that, Big E, if you want to join me, if you would allow us, Mr. Kendrick, how about me, Big E, and maybe Frank White, some other guys, we actually film an episode of the Inside the City Show at the Negro League Museum to help you guys get more publicity and spread the word.
Man, you're welcome here anytime.
All right, you in, Big E?
Absolutely.
So, Big E, we're going to take a break. I want to come back and talk more with you and hear about, you know, your transition from ball boying to swimming to, I think you have a business now. And also, if you've ever been to the museum or if you have a thought about, you know, the Negro League Museum, feel free to give us your thoughts. But we'll be back with you, Big E, in a few seconds right here on the Inside. I keep saying Inside. I'm so used to hosting my TV show, which is Inside Kansas City Show, Inside South Florida Show, Inside LA Show in Orlando, that I always say Inside. So I'm sorry, America, but go on Google and go to those shows and check out my Inside franchises. But back on the Live with Jonathan Aldrich Show on Blog Talk Radio here today, Thursday fun day right here. Here we go. We are back talking baseball. I think we've had about 10 shows now. I think about 3 of those shows are baseball. So as you can see, that my heart is definitely in baseball as an ex-professional baseball player in college and professional player myself. But Big E, the floor is yours. We want to hear about your career, all those things. And I'm actually going to – I got to link DeJuan back. So go ahead, Eric, talk. And I'm going to link DeJuan back right now.
Sure. Well, you know, I was lucky enough to be able to spend 17 years working in the big leagues as a bat boy and later on as a clubby. And I made the transition in 2008 out of necessity more than anything.
Right, so, Biggie, I'm sorry. I think we lost you for a minute. I had to call DeJuan. So go ahead, Biggie. Sorry.
Gotcha. So I got to spend 17 years working with the Royals, and it was some of the best times of my life. And when I left the club in 2008, you know, I wasn't really sure where I was headed, but sort of like DeJuan said, I had to leave the game out of necessity. I needed to be home for my family, and that travel gets a little bit hard.
Hold on, Eric. I gotta plug you, Eric. I gotta plug you because you're a very humble guy, but you're a great father. Tell us about your daughter, because I'm telling you guys, Eric is so cool, and he's just such an amazing guy. We always had a great rapport when we worked with the Royals. But Eric's like, man, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to make the show. You know, I need to babysit my daughter. I don't have a sit. I can't get a sitter. But I was like, Eric, don't worry. But if there's background noise, it'll be just so cute. So thanks for coming on, Eric, and tell us about your daughter, and go ahead and continue your story. I had to plug you because you're a great guy, man. But go ahead, Eric.
Well, I actually have a son. He's 18 weeks old today. He was born on Christmas Day, and I'm so lucky to be able to be a stay-at-home dad. My wife is a doctor of nursing practice, and she's she's the breadwinner right now. And then I have my business, Riptide Aquatics, on the side, and that's my year-round competitive swim team. So my days are spent right now changing shirts about three times, cleaning up the spit up and taking care of the bottles and the nap schedule, and it's an absolutely wonderful life. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
So, DeJuan, we lost you for a second, but Bob was saying that Cool Papa Bell is from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, it is. I've heard the name before. You know, I told you, like, I'm not a historian, you know, like, so I don't know everything about everyone there, but there is a name there.
Cool was from Starksville, Mississippi. Cool Papa Bell is a Hall of Famer. Cool Papa Bell, one of the fastest men to ever play this game. Matter of fact, most believe that he is the fastest to ever play this game. Clocked him circling the bases in 12 seconds from home to home. Cool once stole 175 bases in a less than 200 game season. Twice scored from first base, and this is the honest to God's truth, on a bunt in exhibition games against Major League All-Stars. See, plays like the bunt and run, hit and run were created in the Negro Leagues, later picked up by Major League Baseball. His speed was just legendary. All the old-timers in the Negro Leagues say if he bunted the ball and it bounced twice, forget about it.
He
had no chance to get it.
The only person I've seen comparable to that right now is Billy Hamilton. I saw him in spring training last year, and that's exactly what happened. He bunted the ball, it bounced twice, and the pitcher just had to stick it in his pocket. That's the fastest play I've ever seen. And, you know, I guess it's no coincidence that he's from Mississippi as well.
I'll tell you what, it must be something in the water down there, man, because, you know, I have not got a chance to meet Billy yet. I am certainly looking forward to doing that. I've heard about, you know, his incredible feats in the minor leagues and all the stolen bases, and he might be the closest thing, I think, to Cool Papa Bell that's in the major leagues now. You know, our Royals are running. They run pretty good, and we got a kid here, Terrence Gore. They brought him up from the minor league, and he can get down there pretty quickly too. And of course, Gerard Dyson over here with the Royals can run pretty good. But I really want to see Billy. Billy run.
And Gerard Dyson is from Mississippi as well.
I know it, man. I don't know what y'all put in the water down there.
I didn't drink it.
Frank's wife from Mississippi, and one and I actually met in Mississippi, so it's a Mississippi connection here.
And so whatever they were drinking, my mama should have given me some. Then I
We have to go in a little while, so any closing remarks to one?
Not for me. You know, I apologize for getting disconnected. I feel like I missed out on some good conversation.
Not at all, because people can always log back into and listen to this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, blogtalkradio.com/JonathanAlders. Any closing remarks, Big E?
I just want to thank you for having me today, and I appreciate listening to some of the history that I wasn't aware of, and I look forward to visiting with you, getting together again, and visiting the museum, and having you out to speak at my banquet in August.
And again, get the clubbies together, man. I want to do something with the clubbies, maybe with the Royals in June, so we have to coordinate that. It'd be funny to have all our ex, you know, clubby guys do something, whether it's June, July, August. I think it'd just be fun to see everybody because I haven't seen you guys in how many years. And then Mr. Kendrick, any closing remarks?
Well, man, again, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be on the show and encourage those who are listening, if you make your way to Kansas City, to make sure you make your way over to historic 18th and Vine and check out the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. It is an amazing experience. You will learn a lot about what passion, pride, perseverance, courage can do. And these men had that. And again, a great demonstration of those who truly love the game of baseball. And so it is all kind of rolled into this dynamic story here. And we hope you make your way out to Kansas City at some point in time to experience it.
And if you're listening right now or if you're listening in the future, follow all of us on Twitter. We're going to start with Bob Kendrick. He is at NLBM. That stands for Negro League Baseball Museum. NLBMPREZ. That's on Twitter. DeJuan Day is at DEWONDAY. Big E is at the KC Big E, and we are at Inside KC